Tom Crossland wanted to build a utopia for alternative recreation in rural southwestern Michigan. He called it Rainbow Farm, and it was a campground for people who just didn't fit in at traditional Campground of America sites. They smoked marijuana, or were gay, or just wanted to be left alone. Tom Crossland and his partner, Raleigh Rome, fit all of these descriptions, and 2 years ago, they were shot dead by government sharpshooters after a four-day standoff with local, state, and federal authorities. The story of what happened to Tom Crossland and Raleigh Rome is told by reporter Dean Kuypers in the October issue of Playboy magazine. Mr. Kuypers joins us from our studios at NPR West. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Scott. My pleasure.
And how does it happen that the owners of a hippie campground in a rural part of Michigan wind up in a standoff?
Well, they got in a feud with the local prosecutor out there, and even then, it might not have turned into this kind of standoff if it weren't for the particular character of all the characters involved, I think.
Well, that's what we're trying to understand, and maybe first we have to begin with this region of southwestern Michigan, which is rural, Cass County, not far from the Indiana-Michigan border. Not the kind of place a lot of people would think would be congenial to a hippie retreat, but you say just the opposite.
Sure. It's definitely a part of the world that, you know, William Burroughs would have called it an area of Johnsons. It's definitely people who like to be left alone, and they respect their neighbors. And, you know, Tom and Raleigh, even though they were gay, they were basically good old boys in a lot of ways. And I think there were plenty of people who didn't agree with Tom and Raleigh's marijuana politics, but who still didn't want anybody to go in there and mess with their farm. That rubbed everyone there the wrong way, I think.
Well, also explain to us, if you could, there's apparently a loophole in the laws in Michigan that made it possible for people to openly smoke marijuana illegally.
Oh, right.
But enjoins the police from coming onto private property.
Smoking pot is a misdemeanor offense, and I did have it confirmed by the prosecutor who was working at that time, Scott Teeter, that they would be reticent to go onto private property to serve a ticket. Mm-hmm. So basically, this was, you know, what I say in the article is the thin green line he drew around his farm. Tom knew that to be in the house with a group of people represented broke another law, a crack house law that's called maintaining a drug house. But there is no such law for being out in a field. So amazingly, you know, having 3,000 people standing out in the middle of your field doing this was something altogether different, and people were pretty reticent to go out and try to bust that.
These are, you described what they called the hemp festivals that were held out in their fields on Rainbow Farm. Merle Haggard played there, so did the Byrds.
Right, and Tommy Chong and John Sinclair spoke there. There was a number of pretty top-level acts that came out there.
I think we have to note at the same time, although Tom Crossland tried to discourage people from going beyond marijuana, there were some people out there who were using LSD, coke, etc.
Evidently so. I mean, the police had undercover officers out there for years, and they busted people for doing all kinds of things. I believe, though, that the big thrust of their investigation was to try to tie that to Mr. Crossland. That was the only way that they could actually sort of shut this thing down, and they never could do it. So that was, I think that was always kind of a sticking point there.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little, if you can, about the county prosecutor, Scott Teeter.
Well, this was definitely a clash of personalities, I have to say. I've talked to him several times. I don't find him a disagreeable person in any way. I think he was definitely trying to do something that he thought as being good. Tom Crossland was the kind of guy, he was a deal maker. He would the kind of guy, if Scott could have gone out there and talked to them a few times, they could have talked out a lot of things. And I think that in the beginnings, Mr. Teeter was invited to the festivals, please come see what's going on out here. Scott never talked to Tom Crossland. And Tom really felt like, here's a guy I can't even talk to. And I think that did contribute.
What finally happened that brought this dispute to a head, the dispute between the Cass County prosecutor, Scott Teeter, and then Tom Crossland and Raleigh Rome?
Beginning in the spring of 2001, somewhere in there, Tom and Raleigh allegedly started growing marijuana in their basement. The prosecutor came in on a tax warrant and found these plants, a couple shotguns in the house. They were up on charges, and they were immediately bailed out. Obviously, Tom had some money. But about a week later, Raleigh's son lived with them. He had a 12-year-old son, biological son. Raleigh's son did not get off the bus. He had been taken from school by Family Independence Agency officials, and placed in foster care. And later in the summer, they were observed smoking pot on their farm again. So there was a movement on August 31st. They were supposed to show up for court for a bond revocation hearing, and I think probably about a week beforehand, Tom and Raleigh decided they weren't going to go. And things kind of got off the rails right away that day. That morning, the farm was on fire. Burned everything down, whether that was Tom or someone else, we think that it was Tom. Burned the farm down, except for the farmhouse. And then later that day, because of the fires, a WNDU helicopter flew over out of South Bend, a TV reporters. And someone on the farm shot at the helicopter and actually hit it. That's a FAA matter, so that brought in the FBI.
Yeah. And how were they shot?
This went on for 3 days, about 72 hours. And on September 3rd, a young boy who lived next door, Brandon Peoples, came walking through the woods, somehow evaded all the different police agencies that were out there, actually made his way to the farmhouse. And he sort of offered his services to Tom in terms of, like, do you need any help? And Tom said, well, come with me to the neighbor's house. I got to get some food. And on the way back, actually passed three times past a group of FBI snipers who were hidden in the woods. Mm-hmm. Tom, I guess, spotted one of the guys. Immediately froze, started creeping out into the woods, and this FBI agent sort of jumped out behind a tree and shot him in the head.
Raleigh Rome, how was he killed?
The sun went down, and sometime during the night, some agents in an armed personnel carrier managed to get him a phone. The fires had burned their phones up and everything. And during the night, Raleigh negotiated that he would come out if he could see his son. So they made arrangements for the son to come out at 7 o'clock the next morning. And in fact, he was produced there. They did not see each other, but he was there. He was on his way. But about 6 a.m., the house was on fire. Still sort of unknown exactly how that happened. It could have been Raleigh. It could have been something else. I'm not sure. Raleigh came running out of the house. There was a lot of confusion. Michigan State Police, it was sort of their watch at that point, rolled up in a personnel carrier and were trying to tell him to put the gun down. And according to the snipers on the scene, he raised the gun and he was shot from quite a long distance away.
We have to note the date again. We're talking about September 2001.
Right. This is September 3 and 4, which is only a week before 9/11.
Do you believe the timing of this incident here in rural Michigan worked against it becoming a kind of well-known and celebrated case?
Yeah, I absolutely do. Right away, there were people, even while it was happening, there were protesters out on M60, which is a sort of main drag through Cass County there, protesting, holding up signs saying, this is the next Waco, this is the next Ruby Ridge. In the news cycle, the way these things work, you know, first there's the spot reporting, and everybody's trying to figure out what exactly happened during this five-day standoff. Then about a week later comes the analyses. Those never came because 9/11 intervened, and the whole thing just kind of quietly went away. The backstory and the whole lead-up to this and all their political views and all that just never got explained.
Mr. Kuipers, thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Dean Kuipers, who wrote the article Siege at Rainbow Farm, which appears in the October 2003 issue of Playboy magazine.